You make me sound right miserable when you say it like no, that. So how would you advise a sociopath that's dead inside?
Well, okay, if you want to put him that way, but I don't think you've found your passion yet.
Well, if anyone's listening that wants to throw out some ideas of what my passion might be, go ahead.
My name is Paul Harvey, and this is Life, Passion and Business. We're about helping you explore, finding your passion for life and the work that you do. But it's so much more than that. It's about finding clues to the big life questions. What does it mean to be successful? What is the meaning of life? If you're looking for more, then join me on this journey, where together we will discover through interviews, tools and tips how to live life full of meaning, passion and purpose. My guest, Damien Fogg, is a full-time investor. He has titles such as Chartered Surveyor, Mortgage Broker, Financial Advisor, Property Developer, Landlord, Trader, plus a few more. But Damien is unique in my guest profile because he is not driven by a passion or a strong why. And that has not stopped him from building a life that some might envy. To put it all into context, he has been involved in most kinds of investing over the years. And before his retirement, he had over £22 billion worth of investment and development under his belt. It was other people's money, and it allowed him to build up a passive income. So retirement came early at just 32. Clearly, somewhere along the way, he figured out a system that worked for him. Now, his mission is to help other people gain more time and reduce their stress by managing their finances and investing in their future. Some people struggle as they travel this life. They find it hard looking for meaning or reason for it all. And I would put myself in that boat. I have to say, it's an ongoing quest for me. Thankfully, this podcast helps a lot. It has given me focus and direction, and it's opening so many doors. But enough of my journey, and back to Damien. He has created a life that works for him by making simple choices. He decides what he wants his day to look like and works from there. I hope you enjoy the conversation with Damien Fogg. So I'm delighted today to have Damien Fogg on the line with me. And he is, well, we're the opposite ends of the country. He's down in Brighton and I am still in Scotland. So Damien, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Paul.
So Damien is a bit of a mystery to me because I see Damien's social media kind of life, and it seems to consist lots of takeaway food. So I don't really totally know a great deal about Damien, other than I do know that he doesn't need to do a lot because he seems to be very, very busy, but it's not shown on social media. So Damien, tell me, what is it that you do?
Yeah, that seems to be a bit of an understanding of a lot of people of what I do. No one's quite sure. I'd like to say I was an international delivery food tester, but
well, it's gonna be better than Tager last week, whose family thought he was a drug dealer.
Yeah, I think, well, most people I think just think I'm bone idle, but which is also kind of true.
On the serious side, I know that you've had a journey, and I know it's taken a while to get to this position where you are now.
Yeah, so my journey sort of started about 15 years ago. I'm just an investor. So I invest in things that I can make money from. I was fortunate enough to be able to retire about 4 or 5 years ago when I was 32. Wow. So my journey kind of took me on a slightly random path to get to where I am now. But started off, I was a financial advisor for a while. I've always been a bit of a numbers and money geek, so I quite like investing and finance. So my first degree was in business and finance. Then after that, I decided to go the route of property. So I became a property investor, and just by my very nature, I'm a bit of a nerd, and if I'm going to do something, I want to do it properly. So I went and got a second master's degree and became a chartered building surveyor. So through that, I did quite a lot of work. So I've developed about £2.3 billion worth of property over the years. So quite a lot of development and managing properties. And that through
you,
that
you did say billion there, did you?
Billion with a B, yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, quite a lot.
Is that you owning that property, or that's developments? How is
God bless as I wish. No.
I'm going to say, I think you need to specify that.
Yeah, probably before I start getting marriage offers from people. Yeah, no, I've worked for some pretty big organisations. I've worked for the government quite a lot. So the Ministry of Defence, I managed a lot of their projects, worked for them. I worked for the Homes and Communities Agency, which is the sort of UK government property arm, effectively.
Okay, working with the government, I can see where the billions come in, because they've always bought a bit of land. They've bought that bit there. Yeah,
they've got a bit of stuff knocking about. and also, some of the numbers in there were my own, and some of them were for individual investors I worked with as well. So I started... By doing all of that, I managed to build up a portfolio of properties myself and stocks and shares and all that good stuff. And that put me in a position that when I was 32, I took the decision to step back from the normal 9-to-5 and sort of retire and live off my investments at that point. Mm-hmm. So that was quite nice. Mm-hmm. It didn't last very long. So I was probably retired for about 4 months. Doing not a great deal.
That's the big thing about retirement, isn't it? People kind of go this thing for retirement, and once the holiday mode has passed, it's then like, shit, what am I going to do now?
Yeah, basically. So that was the question I kept on asking myself after the first week or so. There's only so much TV you can watch. So it was like, oh, I should probably do something. And so I started working with other investors, people that wanted to get into property, right, and helping them develop a strategy and build up their own portfolio and doing some developments with people. But what I found, with the exception of a small handful of people, I was dealing generally with very rich people, mm-hmm, that just wanted to turn the big pile of money into a slightly bigger pile of money. And it just wasn't that inspiring for me. So I just kind of lost interest in it a little bit and was a little bit aimlessly wandering around doing bits and bobs. I came into sort of an entrepreneurial group and was helping people in that with property questions. And mm-hmm, so I just was probably lost for about 2 years, just fiddling around with things at the side, not really committing to anything, trying bits and bobs, but not really putting too much effort in. And it wasn't until I started to realize that what I quite like doing is seeing a bit of a change in people. And so now I tend to work with people who are quite early on in the start of their journey and just help them take control of their own finances, learn how to get started with investing. So I'm no longer a financial advisor. So what I've started to do is actually educate people on how to effectively be their own financial advisor instead. So that's kind of where I'm at the moment. And it seems to have hit a bit of a sweet spot in that people seem to need it, people seem to like it, and I quite enjoy it. It's quite good fun.
So is that where your passion now lies in there? I mean, were you passionate about the work you did before, or where has that been in your life?
So yeah, this might not be helpful for your podcast, but I've always kind of seen myself as a little bit dead inside. I've not really been that passionate about stuff. So my highs aren't particularly high. My lows aren't particularly low. I'm just one of these people that's just pretty happy, just bumbling along. So from a passion point of view, I wouldn't say there's anything that gets me, you know, massively revved up and overexcited to get started each day and go and do a certain thing or help a certain group. I think I work more the other way of sometimes, if you know, you wake up and you're doing a job and you think, oh, I just don't want to do this. So I tend to be attracted. Well, I suppose I tend to be more repelled by stuff rather than attracted towards it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I
think it is helpful, because I think this word passion, I mean, I use it because it's what people want to hear, because what they're told they should be here. They should hear. I mean, this program is an exploration about what it is to do life. And life, passion, business was the words that, you know, because, all right, what it's about here is about how do we bring our essence of ourself into the work that we do? Because in a sense, that's where we're going to get the most ease of journey, I guess. Because if you're not bringing what you want to come out to play, it's going to be a boring life for you. And you're actually giving me something which is a bit unique, because a lot of people I've had on the show are very passionate. But I also understand there's a group of people that are not. They kind of move from the path of least resistance in a way. Would you say you're that?
Yeah, a lot of people talk about you've got to find your reason why.
Yeah.
And honestly, I still haven't found it. My reason why is, why not? I grew up in a very sort of stable, nice, loving family. I've got no, you know, rags to riches story or anything like that. My family were all supportive, loving, kind. I've had a pretty good sheltered life, to be honest. Nothing massively dramatic or exciting's happened.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just sort of bumbling along, enjoying myself, doing things that I like doing, avoiding things I don't like doing. And for me, the whole 9 to 5 being told what to do by someone, that wasn't really ticking the boxes for me. So I used what turns out, now that I've spoken to more people about it, a slightly peculiar childhood in that I did grow up around finances. My parents own their own company and they're entrepreneurs, so it kind of came naturally to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I've just used that to sort of design a life that I've got now that works for me. It doesn't. There's nothing really in it that I don't like doing.
Mm.
So yeah, that was kind of how I've got where I've got to. Much less I'm really excited about this particular cause, or I want to get really rich so I can help this particular group of people. I mean, that might make me sound heartless, but there's lots of people I want to help, but there's no one individually, there's no draw from the past that says I really want to help this particular group. I just vaguely want to make the world slightly nicer than I left it.
Mm-hmm.
So I tend to, my kind of mission, passion, if I wanted to make up a word and pretend it was more than it was, but if what I'm trying to do is actually help other people get into a position where they can follow their own passion, because I've accepted I don't really have one. So if I can help people take control of their own finances, start looking after their own money, and maybe get to the point where, you know, if they are working a 9 to 5, 5 days a week, they can drop that down to 4 days a week, but they can use that extra day to go out and help other people follow their passion, be useful people. That seems like a better way for me to impact more people than me actually trying to do something nice.
Mm.
Probably a weird way of saying it, but yeah, there you go.
Well, it's a different way of saying it. And it's interesting that you're in a position to be able to do that with people because of your own situation. So do you want to say more about that background and what was it about your background that led you to this? What did your parents do?
So my parents started a marketing company. They started one quite a while ago, and that went fairly dramatically wrong for a whole bunch of, looking back to it, really obvious schoolboy errors. But I grew up during that bit, so I saw the start of it, the successes of it, and then the failings of it. Then they started another one after that, which was a lot more successful, a bit more stable. And so that is something that is still ongoing. It's something I'm still a part of. So I now sort of run that company. And it was, because it was marketing, it was quite sales-based and quite customer-orientated. So I did get to see quite a lot of aspects of business through that. And because my first degree was in, it was a business and finance degree, I kind of got a good overview of all of the different parts of business. So that was, I mean, for business studies, for example, I did that at A-level, and pretty much all of the exams I got 100% in, which I still don't understand. I don't know how you can get 100% in an exam that isn't like multiple choice. But I think naturally I'm just quite good at arguing from a business side of things, and that was apparently all you needed to do in the exams.
Yeah,
so
you can prove the point and they can't argue with it and you're done.
Yeah, I just remember my teacher used to always talk about well-weighted language, and so never commit to anything and always say, well, possibly, maybe, this could, perhaps. I think I was just really good at writing sentences that basically made no sense, but whatever. So yeah, I've always just had this talent and interest in business. Yeah. And I'm a massive numbers geek. So I listened to somebody on stage the other day talking about how pointless algebra was. And I was just sat there thinking, I managed to use algebra pretty much every day. So I might be doing something wrong there. But
no, I think probably that person didn't know what algebra does. That's probably part of the problem.
Yeah, possibly. They may not have been looking after their finances the right way. But yeah, so I grew up around all of those sort of influences, and growing up reading the Financial Times and the Sunday Times on the weekend, that didn't seem weird to me. But now that I've started talking to people, it's the whole imposter syndrome. When I started doing this and started working with people, and, you know, you'd have conversations with them and say, well, you know how the FTSE works. And they're like, what's the FTSE? Is that not something you play under the table with someone you fancy?
Mm.
And you're like, okay. All this stuff I grew up naturally just knowing and understanding, not everybody had that same upbringing, that same surrounding. So I think there's a huge education piece missing in, well, pretty much the entire world now, of what managing finances really looks like and what all the different options are out there. So that's kind of, I mean, I've no idea what even the original question was now, I'm just bambling, but that's kind of what led me to where I am now, to sort of merge the past I was given that I was fortunate enough to grow up in and somehow flick that across to, well, now I can be vaguely useful for other people.
Yeah. So my question was about that background, how you got to this and you know, what the background was, and you kind of covered it quite nicely.
Excellent.
So is that something that you think needs to change? Is that something you'd like to see change? I mean, I notice, I mean, I have a very poor knowledge of kind of finance, and I've been in business for years, but certainly, you know, some of the more obvious stuff you talk about, I appreciate I was never taught it. And I certainly know it's not taught now. I mean, some of the stuff my son is doing in business studies is like yawn material. Why are you teaching him this?
Yeah, it's just not helpful in the real world, is it? In real business, what they're taught in schools anymore. So I think realistically,
he's being taught to pass exams.
Yeah.
That's what he's being taught.
To be fair, for probably the vast majority of people, is that really all you need? Because obviously we are in a small little microcosm, a little bubble of entrepreneurs and business owners, and people are big into self-development. What percentage of the population do you think that actually represents?
I suspect we're probably quite a small part of the population, probably less than 20%, I'd have thought.
I would have thought so. And so being able to teach someone how to successfully run their own company, for 80% of the population, they're probably just going to sit there thinking, well, this is pointless, why bother? So it really is like the algebra statement of, well, I'm never going to use this, so what's the point of me learning it? Mm-hmm. Now, we've obviously got much more of a gig economy nowadays, so hopefully it will start becoming more relevant for more people. But the fact is, most people will end up working for someone else, and nothing wrong with that. You can live a very happy life, passionate life, doing all kinds of stuff. You don't need the stress and the pressures of being a business owner. So it is a fine balance, I think, of getting it enough information so that you can become a successful business person, but also not just boring people to death with random shit they'll never need. But so, I think answering your question, which I just remembered, I think realistically secondary school, so what, 14, 15, 16, that kind of age group, I think definitely need a foundation knowledge of basic financial principles. So, you know, how do you look after your incomings? How do you look after your outgoings? What's an asset? What's a liability? How do you invest in the very broader sense of what's even available to invest in? Mm. Like, I know a lot of people talk about ISAs and they don't really actually understand what an ISA is. So it's, people think of it as something you buy and that gives you access to something else. But in reality, it's just a different name for a bank account. Mm. So there's lots of fairly obvious, simple things that, you know, you can sit down with someone and within about 10, 15 minutes, you can explain away quite a lot of the fear that's surrounding money. And you'll say, look, it's not terrifying. It's not that jargon full. You can just get your head around it pretty quickly. You can make some easy decisions, quick wins, and all of a sudden you're up and running. You're in control at least. And even if you don't want to play an active role in your finances, you at least know what's happening in the world and how that's going to impact potentially on you and potentially on your future.
Do you deliver that somehow? Do you have that, you know, you say you sit down with people for 15 minutes. Is that something you've written a book on that one or something?
Yeah, I did write a book. So our friend Colette managed to drag a book out of me.
she's a podcast guest, actually.
Is she? Cool.
Yeah, she has been, yes.
So she bullied me into getting a book out of it. that was an interesting process. But yeah, so I've got the book out. At the moment, I'm in the process of recording a video course that will go alongside that. So just it goes into a bit more detail and holds the hand a little bit more to explain all of the different elements of it. But to be honest, the book, I think for most people, I'm pretty good at dumbing stuff down. So I think the feedback I've had so far has been, it's pretty good at explaining the basic principles, the fundamental principles of finance and investing, and just giving people a bit of an overview of what's available. And then from there, people can obviously choose to work with me in a bit more detail. I've got a mastermind at the moment. I work one-to-one with some people. So there's other avenues to steal more of my information if you wanted to.
Investing for people with small amounts of money seems quite because the interest rates are so low on something, it seems almost like a futile process because you've got such a small return. Is there a certain sweet spot where you have to get to be an investor?
I mean, yes. I'd like to say no, everybody should start no matter what. But the reality is, as you say, there is always something you can be doing better. So even if you can save £10 a month, then sticking it into a bog standard savings account, you can probably do better than that. Now, when you start getting to the point of, you know, £100 a month that you can save, that's when you can start using some of the things like ISAs, you can start investing in the stock market. And there's ways in which you can invest like that that aren't going to end up being exorbitant from fees, and it's not going to be pointless. But yeah, you are right. If you're saving £100 a month and you look at, well, I could put it in a savings account or I could put it in the stock market, for example, then after a year, it's basically going to be the same. You've got the potential of losing money in the stock market. You haven't in a savings account. Mm-hmm. So it's quite easy to look at that and dismiss it and think, well, what's the point? I'm not going to bother. The idea is, though, this is the sort of thing that when you are 18, when you get your first job, if you can start saving 10, 20, 30 pounds a month, if you do that from then, if you build that habit and that consistency of paying away something each month, then over time, you can go from £20 a month to 100 to maybe 200, £300 a month. When you eventually hit probably 30s, 40s, when you're starting to get to your peak earning, you're putting away a decent chunk of money. And because it's compounded for such a long period of time, then all of a sudden you find yourself, well, okay, I'm getting ready to retire now. Who knows what that'll be in future time, but if it's around the 70 mark, I think I was looking up stats the other day for this course I was recording, and I think it was something like 8% of the country have over £100,000 when they come to retire. It sounds like quite a lot.
It's not.
But £100,000 when you come to retire roughly equates to about £4,000 a year as an income.
Mm-hmm.
So it's next to nothing. There's something like 30-odd percent of all retired people, or all people over the age of 50, have no other pension provisions, so they're going to have to live somehow on about £8,200 a year.
Hmm.
So it's a pretty big step back for most people to all of a sudden think, well, okay, my entire earnings for potentially the next 30 years that I'm alive, I've got to live off £8,000 a year.
Hmm.
Clearly it's doable, but it's not necessarily the most fun way to live. Whereas if you can do a bit of delayed gratification and maybe not spend all of your money on stupid stuff along the way, then you can quite easily, anybody I'd say, if you're a minimum wage worker somewhere, if you start early enough, you could still easily be in the top 8% of the country and have over 100,000 in your pension pot by the time you come to retire. The power of compounding is that strong.
Mm. But as you say, 100,000 is not exactly a lot in modern return, is it?
No, and the 4,000, that's very back of the envelope calculations for things like annuities, where you basically give someone 100,000 and they promise to give you £4,000 a year every year until you die.
Mm-hmm.
So a weird little financial product there for people. But there are other ways and other things you can do with that to maybe increase the return you'd get. But even so, 100,000, it's still not a great deal. There's the whole, the American book, The Millionaire Next Door. It's surprising, very small changes to your lifestyle and how you invest and how you look at finances can have a massive impact when you start accelerating 20, 30, 40, 50 years into the future.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the courses I've promised people I'll make is a course on how to invest for your firstborn child or a new child.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you can get started, if you have a kid and you start investing on that kid's behalf for the next 20 years, even a relatively small amount paid away each month, it means your kid can go to university and come out completely debt-free, or you can wait a little bit longer. Maybe when they're 25, you can give them the deposit for their first house.
Mm.
And all of a sudden, things like that become very achievable with pretty, not inconsequential, but with pretty small sums of money just invested consistently in something that has potential to increase more than just a savings account. So it can snowball quite quickly.
The government tried it, didn't they? Because they launched some kind of savings scheme for babies when they were born at some point, didn't they?
Yeah, the government's usually got some kind of scheme around to encourage it, because the government, you know, as daft as they are most of the time, they also realise that they've got a massive hole to fill at some point in the future when a load of people come to retire, none of them have got any money, and they all just sit there waiting for the government to pay for them. So the government's actually quite keen. That's why things like ISAs, which have huge tax benefits for once you put money into them, pensions have huge tax benefits when you put money into them. Mm. So the government's quite keen to try and stimulate people to start saving, start thinking about the future, only because they know it's going to catch them out at some point and they're going to end up having to pick up the tab. So
I think my son just missed it because he was born just before it came into effect.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
It was a year after. It may have even been months after he was born, actually, that this thing came into effect. But yeah, but it's not a big deal. But I think it was so much money that was an account that was set up that was automatically put some money into it, and I think the government matched it or something. Long time ago.
Yeah, they used to do something where they paid in like a lump sum of money on your behalf when you opened it and got started. Yeah,
that's it.
But now there's things where you can, you know, instead of saying for a baby shower, instead of asking for random stuff that you don't necessarily want, or you end up with 43 different cribs, you actually say, well, yeah, here's the account that we've set up for our kid. You can get child ISAs and stuff like that. Just say, stick 10, 20 quid into that for us. Any birthdays? Yep. Kids aren't making memories when they're young, are they? So nobody needs a toy. Give them some wrapping paper and let them play on the floor.
Yeah.
You can tell I don't have a kid.
I can tell you haven't had that gene switched on, yes. Yeah, no. Because when the parent switch gets thrown, you kind of your attitude changes totally.
Fair enough. I'll wait and see what happens when that does eventually get flicked.
Indeed. So tell me, what you know, clearly you don't follow a passion path. So there must be. So you follow a path of least resistance. Is that what you would say?
Yeah, I think that would be fair to say.
So does that mean you could find yourself doing anything? Like, oh, yeah, let's go here, let's go there. I mean, before we spoke this, you said about traveling home or going out to Thailand or going all sorts of places. I guess you go where your heart leads you, or is it not quite your heart leading you?
I don't think it's that well thought through, to be honest. So earlier in the year, I had a house that I owned in Cambridge, and then kind of on a whim, which is a bit weird for someone who's a mortgage broker and a property investor, I decided I don't want to own my own home anymore for a while. Okay. So I sold my house and then went into rented accommodation. And then the landlord decided to sell the house that I was living in. And so I thought, well, okay, I can either just find somewhere else to rent, or I don't actually need to be anywhere to do the work that I do. Mm-hmm. So I wonder where else I should go. And it was literally, I've talked about going to Thailand and basically doing a Thai boxing training camp for probably about 5-6 years now. So I'm a slow learner, but it seemed like an opportune time to just think, well, okay, I'm going to go over there, give it a try for a couple of weeks, see what happens. And so I went out there in June and ended up staying until September. So I was there for about 3-4 months in the end. And
did you do the Thai boxing thing?
Well, turns out I did Thai boxing like twice. It's not really for me. People trying to punch me in the face, I'm far too pretty for that.
Now you get hit. That's what I was thinking about.
Yeah. I think back in my youth, I was a bit more up for that sort of thing. But no, it turns out not so much anymore. So I ended up doing CrossFit out there instead. And so I was training 2-3 times a day in CrossFit, mostly sleeping all the time in between. And then every so often, I bought a couple of houses while I was out there, not in Thailand. Weirdly, I bought one in the UK, 2 in America. And I can do everything, the wonders of the internet and technology, I can do everything from everywhere, really, nowadays.
Yeah.
So that was kind of early in the year, and I suppose gives a bit of an indication of, on a bit of a whim, I decided that sounds like a good idea, so I went and did that. I eventually, because of the visa situation, I'd done a couple of visa runs, and I thought, I should probably come back home at some point. So came back and was down in Brighton because I know Dan, who I think you know as well.
Yeah.
I just bought myself a motorbike when I got down here because I thought, well, that could be fun. So we went on a couple of bike rides, and then I was looking at places to stay down here. And he was like, yeah, you can just stay here if you want for a bit. So I did. So I'm currently still living out of a backpack. Haven't really unpacked since I got back from Thailand.
Couch surfing.
Well, not so far as couch. I have a bed. I'm not that homeless. But yeah, taking advantage of other people's hospitality, surfing.
So what is success to you? Because that's always kind of like, you know, we were always sold the success model. And to some extent, you've kind of lived it very, very fast because you've kind of built up the monies to actually do it. But a lot of people, the success model is building up money over time to retire. So what's success for you? Because you are on that line somewhere.
Yeah. I think for me, I've done like a lot of reading around from a financial point of view of where you should be aiming for. And genuinely, I think once you hit the, I think it's 75,000 a year, whether it's dollars or pounds or whatever currency you're in, maybe not Thai baht, but when you hit that level, after that, money doesn't do anything for you. Yeah. So when you earn 75 grand a year, you can probably afford a nice house. You probably drive a decent car. You're probably going on half decent holidays. When you get more than that, if you double the amount, if you 10x the amount of money you get, you're just doing the same stuff, but slightly better. So once you hit a certain income level, I think money drops out of the equation completely. And yeah, it's annoying when people who have hit that level start saying that, but I think it's fair to say money is a very important driver, a very important definition of success, I think, only up to a certain degree though. So once you hit that, I think at that point, I know lots of very wealthy people who are miserable as sin because they use money as a scorecard. And unless you are one of, what, 3-4 people in the entire world, you're never going to be in the top of that. So you're always going to end up losing. That's, to me, seems like a bit of a daft thing to try and do. So I very much see money as just, it gives you options and it gives you the freedom to choose what you do, when you do it, where you do it, and who you do it with. So I think for me, success is reaching a relatively low, and I say that without trying to sound too much of a dick, but relatively low income targets. And then after that, it's all about doing something that you enjoy. And honestly, I think having something to struggle against. I think at some point you said you were going to ask me like the last question. So I've been thinking on it. And I think that's kind of the conclusion I've come to. The only way you can consider yourself to be successful if you've got something to overcome and you manage to somehow get a little bit closer to overcoming that each and every day.
Yeah. I mean, what you're talking about in some ways is Maslow's hierarchy of need.
Yeah, I think definitely money is
Because once you've got everything set up in terms of all those things, it's then you start going to the next level. And it's like, what is the next level for you? It's like, you know, in Maslow's case, it was higher thinking, I think, in some ways.
Yeah, it was a self-actualization is the top one.
Yeah, it is.
So, I mean, I don't really know what that even means, but I get what he's saying. I think.
Well, if you've got to worry about where the food's coming, if you've got to worry about where the food's coming from, that's going to be your primary driver, isn't it, in a way?
Yeah, so food, shelter, all that good stuff. Yeah. And I think nowadays, some kind of social network is probably a lot lower down than possibly people thought. Doesn't matter how rich you are, if you've got no friends and you've got no one to talk to, it's pretty depressing. So there are, absolutely. I mean, I'm a bit of a, well, when was I born? 80s. So I used to grow up playing The Sims. Don't know if you ever played that as a computer game.
Now, my wife still plays it as it goes. She's very big into The Sims.
Okay, well, then you've probably heard, you've got these, and it's a bit like Maslow's, you've got these different criteria that you've got to try and keep your little body person happy with by doing all these different things. And I feel like life is very similar to that. They did a good job of making that game. So if you ignore any one aspect of, whether it's health, wealth, social, all that stuff, whichever one you ignore and let get too low, it really doesn't matter how high any of the other ones are, it can't make up for the fact that if you've got absolutely no money, if you've got absolutely poor health, if you've got no friends, that can just ruin and taint absolutely everything else you've got that other people might look at and say, well, why are you being miserable? You've got X, Y, and Z. So I think it's having that balance across the board, really, of all the different things that make a human a happy person, and trying to just stick with doing stuff that doesn't tip the balance too much in any one way.
So I want to just, before I go to, there's two more questions left for you, really, but I want to go back to this passion one, because it does intrigue me that you don't actually have, you follow kind of the path of least resistance. So what would your advice be to give to people who have the same thing as you? Because who have the same kind of find, you know, how would you advise someone who finds it difficult to find joy in the same way as you do?
You make me sound right miserable when you say it like that.
I can't frame the question properly. You know what I mean? Because you're not the classic following your passion person that I would talk to.
So how would you advise a sociopath that's dead inside?
Well, okay, if you want to put him that way, but I don't think you're dead inside. I just don't think you've found your passion yet. That's personally where I am with it.
Fair enough. Well, if anyone's listening that wants to throw out some ideas of what my passion might be, go ahead. I think someone who's in the same position as me, because obviously there are a few people out there that post similar questions in entrepreneur groups and that I'm in, that say, I don't really have a massive reason why, I've not got something really driving me forward. I think for me, it was very much a case of figure out what you want your life to look like on a random Tuesday afternoon. And so when you say to people, and this is one of the process I go with people when we're talking about finances, of what is your dream life? And obviously I'm much more interested in, and how much does that cost? But just playing that scenario out of what you do. So I've talked to a handful of people, and what it seemed to come down to, what it boiled down to, was what emotions do you want to feel on a daily basis, but on like a really mundane, boring Tuesday? Because we can all come up with a great, oh, I want to go skydiving and then drinking cocktails and then wrestle an alligator and then whatever. We can come up with some insane stuff that we might do once. But if you have to do that every Tuesday, it might quickly get quite boring. So for me, I sort of looked at designing a life that allowed me to do certain things and have the option to do different things. And I think if I was advising someone or sort of giving someone a bit of a nudge, it would just be that. Think about what do you want your life to look like? What do you want to do the first thing in the morning? Do you want to, for me, not having to wake up with an alarm was a simple but big indicator that, well, okay, yeah, I'm actually living the life I wanted to live now. Mm-hmm. And so things like that, think about what time you get up, what's the first thing you do? Do you have a morning routine? What's that look like? Who's involved in your life? What are you doing? What's your purpose? As in, what are you struggling against? What are you trying to overcome? In what way are you trying to make yourself a slightly better version of you than yesterday? And then look at what you do in the evenings. Who do you spend your time with? What activities you do? What hobbies do you do? And just play all that stuff out. And that, for me, there was nothing in there. It was like, and then at the end, I'm going to save all the children and I'm going to give them all new eyes. There was nothing like that in there. It was just, well, yeah, that sounds like a really quite cool life. What do I need to do in order to get there? And I sort of reverse engineered what I needed to do and eventually got there.
I think it is an interesting question, that one of what do we do these days? It's like, if you went back to like 30, 40 years, people had quite structured social lives. There was quite a lot of things going on. But nowadays it seems quite odd when you think about it. Like, what do people do with themselves? Short of, you know, binge watch Netflix.
Well, yeah, everything we do is set up around the whole virtual world.
Yeah, it's like we seem to have stopped doing stuff.
Yeah, and it almost seems weird. I was talking to someone the other day who met their partner at like a club or something, and that seemed a lot weirder nowadays than someone saying, oh, I met them on eHarmony or Match or whatever. It seems to have gone the other way around. Now it seems weird to do stuff in real life. So when someone says, oh, I go to a knitting club or something.
Well, my parents were classic. Some of they went to clubs and things when I was a child growing up, and there were loads of clubs on. I mean, some friends of mine were in drama clubs. There was all sorts of events and things going on, lots of community stuff going on. It doesn't seem to happen quite so much as it used to.
And it just seems weird if there are, doesn't it?
I mean, I always remember someone saying to me they worked in a bank and they were encouraged by the bank to be involved in local charities and given time out to do that work.
That's so they could manage the charity's funds, I reckon.
Well, possibly, but it was also about being part of the community. It was a local bank, and they wanted the bank to be an active part of the community.
Yeah, and that community aspect now, pros and cons of it, but our community now stretches across the entire world. So I've now got really good friends in Thailand that I will talk to fairly regularly, and I have no issues with. I'll probably go over to the States at some point next year and meet up with a bunch of people I used to work with and know through online networking and stuff. So in that sense, it's great. But as you say, on a day-to-day basis, well, yeah, I can't pop over to Chicago and hang out with my friends.
Well, the beauty of having a community is when you are that much older, you've got those relationships with people that, you know, when you are in need, they are next door or just down the road and can help you out. Whereas, as you say, they can't do it from Chicago.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens in the next 30, 40 years when who's going to come wipe the dribble off my face?
Well, we are seeing this now, aren't we? That's why social care is in such a state in this country, because there are no communities around to help people. And that's...
No, so good investment opportunity for people. Care homes. Always have an angle, Paul.
Always have an angle. So tell me, this is the point where I ask you a question which allows you a very open answer. So it's like, because I don't want you to put the phone down and go, I wish I'd said so-and-so. So like, is there anything I should have asked you that I didn't ask?
Not that I can think of, no.
Oh, well, in that case, that's fine then.
I don't know. No, not really.
So, okay, so if people want to get in touch with you or work with you or do stuff with you, how do they do that? What's the process in your book?
So because I do a whole bunch of stuff, you can always stalk me on Facebook. I'm around there. There's not many of me. My name's Damien Fogg, but I'm guessing that'll be written somewhere.
It will be.
My web addresses are theepinvestor.com, okay, which is more of the finances and personal finance stuff. And then the other one is fogfinancial.com, which is more for property investments and mortgages, things like that.
Those links will be on the website. So it's brilliant. So just
cool.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. So I'm knocking about. I'm easy to track down. Disturbingly, I'm all over the internet.
Oh, well, that's good then. That's because you don't have a day job.
It's true. Far too much spare time. If anyone runs a club locally, let me know.
So the last question, and you said you've been thinking about it. So the last question is, you know, we are animals, really. We are nothing, you know, we're no different from the cats, the dogs, and other animals in this world. And yet, we have this brain and think that there is a purpose to it all. So in your opinion, what is the meaning of life? What's the purpose of it? Why are we here?
So
you can say what you said to me earlier if you want to.
I got the impression that wasn't necessarily the sort of target audience that you've got. So
Not. I have to say that was a four-letter word for my audience's benefit, but you can use your imagination. Damien, I appreciate, don't be a git is probably probably quite a good thing to say, but I know that wasn't the word you used. But what other things would you suggest?
Yeah, so after you've stopped being a git, I think for me, it's all about just trying to be the best version of yourself.
Yeah.
And pretty much every day you can do something to try and improve yourself. And that whole, I don't like having the idea of a goal that you can attain. So for me, it's like, I can't remember if it was a Arabic curse that says, may all your wishes come true or something. The idea of achieving something and then having nothing to fill its void just is depressing. So I think for me, the whole purpose of life is just to be slightly better than you were the day before. And quite often that ends up leading you into trying to help other people out and help them become better versions of themselves. And it sounds a bit hippie, but secretly I am, but I don't tell anyone. It's just not being a dick.
Mm.
Just try and be a half decent human, try and help other people be half decent humans, and use the talents that you've got and work on them and become slightly better at them. That's what I stopped fighting with myself and realized I'm quite good at this numbers stuff. A lot of other people would benefit if they were a bit better with the numbers stuff. Maybe I should do something about that.
Mm.
So that's my deep and meaningful philosophical meaning of life.
And it was very deep.
Was it? Yeah.
No, but it's
don't be a dick.
It's the practical thing, isn't it? It's like, you know, do good and enjoy the journey in a way.
Everything anybody does is entirely pointless, so you may as well have some fun along the way.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So Damien Fogg, thank you so much for your time this afternoon. And it's been a very unique and unusual podcast for me because you have completely bucked all my ideas, which has been fantastic.
Well, there you go. At least you know what I do now, possibly, maybe.
Yes, I do. I do. I do know what you do now. And it'll be great to catch up with you again soon.
Happy days. Perfect. Happy days. Well, thank you very much, Paul.
Thank you very much.
And that was Life, Passion and Business with Paul Harvey and my guest, Damien Fogg. As he said, he is easy to find on Facebook. And if you want direct links to those websites and the book, check out Life, Passion and Business website, and his details will be underneath the podcast with all the other guests and things. As I am speaking to you today, this is podcast interview number 48 and will be the last before Christmas 2018. However you celebrate the festive season, I wish you a happy time. Of course, I don't need to remind you to like and comment this show, but I will, because reviews and comments are what build our audience for us. And we're doing so well, thanks to your help. Now, one more thing before I go. I have just recorded the 50th programme, and it is a conversation with two of my past guests, Simon Jordan and Susie Beaumont. The show is dedicated to the big vision and goals and will be the perfect listening for New Year's Day. It only remains me to say thank you for listening. I appreciate your time and attention, and I will catch you later. And that was Life, Passion and Business with your host Paul Harvey and my guests Guy and Ilan Furman. What a great program. I so enjoyed that conversation with you guys, and I am looking forward to perhaps catching up with them again. They did promise to do some live coaching with me on the program at some stage, and maybe we'll take them up on that option. So if you would like to catch up with Guy and Ilan, you certainly can. All the details you will find on the Life, Passion and Business website underneath this podcast. It only remains me to say thank you for taking the time to listen to these shows, because it's such a pleasure to create them, and I hope they bring you some useful content or information. And on that subject, I am always looking for interesting guests. If you think you have something to offer this program, please get in touch. If you visit the website, there is a guest section where you can just send me some details and let's talk. If you are enjoying this podcast series, please support the show by liking and sharing our content. Maybe even submitting a review to iTunes. It all supports us to build the program and build our audience. Anyway, as I said, thank you for listening, and I hope to catch you later.